You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 1 October. We've got local vehicle sales data due 2:30 this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Chantal Marks from F&B Wealth and Investments. A good update from Netcare. Well, there may be some T's and C's, but I'm interested in what she thinks of that, and particularly in the healthcare sector, which is really Netcare and Life Healthcare. Christy Floon from PwC, business risks and opportunities that created by forced change, and that change is more than just tariffs. And then Graham Stokey from EY Africa, the latest challenges and opportunities in the private equity industry. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Port of Gauteng aims to revitalize rail, removing 30% of trucks from the N3. It could also bury Joburg's existing inland port at City Deep by offering faster container turnaround times. Bloomberg, US begins government shutdown with Trump and Democrats at an impasse. First shutdown in 6 years for the US government. Morning markets. US was green, S&P 0.4% higher, Nasdaq up 0.3%. The East is red or closed. Sydney's down 0.1%. Tokyo's off 0.6%. And then Hong Kong is closed for National Day, which also means no 10-cent trading. Commodities are mixed. Gold futures, $3,895. Brent weaker, $66.12. Platinum weaker, $1,609. And palladium a few dollars higher, $1,301. The rand is 17.27. Bitcoin, $114,500. And top 40 opening call, a green open, but 40 points, 0.04%.
MoneyWeb Now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chantal Marks, Head of Research, F&B Wealth and Investments. Chantal, appreciate the early morning voluntary trading update yesterday from Netcare. This is the year ending September. It's some bits to like. I mean, not knocking it out the park, but you know, it adjusted HEPS to be 16 to 19% higher, revenue up a little bit. They've got occupancies, do we call it occupancies in hospitals, slightly higher, up about 0.7%. Your take on the Netcare numbers? The market certainly liked them a bit, pushing the stock a bit higher.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned in your question why the market really liked it, because tepid revenue growth translating to high teens earnings growth tells us that this company is being very efficiently managed. So they've invested quite a bit in the digitization of their operations. And from what I can read between the lines, this has really resulted in them operating a lot more effectively. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is a really good sign. Netcare, very focused on the South African market, executing very well in this market as well. And then the other thing that's really helping, and they kind of mentioned it briefly, is no load shedding. A hospital cannot have load shedding or cannot have not have electricity. So they were burning so much diesel over the last few years, and that just wasn't there in this period.
That's actually a great point. I mean, load shedding hits everyone, but I think, as you say, hospitals a whole lot more. If you step back, we've got a small sector. It's Netcare, it's Life Healthcare. I mean, do either of these, as an investment perspective, look attractive to yourself?
So I think both companies are quite interesting in the sense that they had this foray into the UK, and it really didn't work out for either. I think Life Healthcare probably walked away relatively unscathed, but Netcare was in a lot of trouble with its UK operation that was kind of just loaded with debt. Both companies are very focused on the South African market, very focused on hospitals and kind of complementary services in particular. Like Netcare's exposure to mental health, I like Life Healthcare's exposure to renal. So I think that these companies have a lot to offer, but it's not growth. You're not going to get massive growth yet unless South Africa's economy starts firing up. So at the moment, I see it as more of a diversifier. And just kind of very randomly, I was thinking about old Mediclinic that delisted and is now sitting in Remgro. It still makes up 25% of Remgro's net asset value. And I'd probably actually play it through Remgro because there you get a lot of diversification and you still get this exposure to kind of healthcare that's quite defensive through the cycle.
I was going to say, because Remgro, as you say, that's 25%. And then there's some other really little good businesses lurking there. OUTsurance being the biggie. There's Heineken. And, of course, a significant discount to net asset value with the Remgro at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Heineken is the loss is narrowed to basically a break-even position. I see profitability there improving quite substantially over the next few reporting periods. I think that Remgro is also trying to pivot away from having these listed entities. So there's a really good chance that you could get some proper value unlock with perhaps some unbundlings or sales and dividends or however they want to structure it, because that discount is definitely there. And then that CVIH Vodacom tie-up, I'm excited. I'm excited to see what they can do with that scale that is now behind that business.
Okay, I like that. A less direct, but perhaps a more interesting way to actually get some healthcare exposure. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investment. Appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter, is around healthcare. Attractive opportunity for investors. Have your vote. Have your say. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Kristie Froon. He's PwC South Africa Senior Economist. Kristie, appreciate the time. A recent megatrends report coming out of PwC and your colleagues, a lot to dig into it. One of the things that really stood out for me, you talk around the measurement of global uncertainty reached new highs. And we can look at what's coming out of the US administration in terms of tariffs and kind of pin it all onto that. But it's much more than that. It's AI. It's climate change. There's a lot out there giving this heightened uncertainty.
Yes, look, I think we know that the headlines are dominated at the moment by politics, and very often the US is involved, and the story around tariffs, which is really impacting South Africa. But for us, that's part of the story, and it's part of the, as we call it, the mega trends, the big things that are shaping our society, these long-term driving factors. And some of them we are very much aware of, like the politics, climate change, which we see very often referenced in all kinds of analysis and warnings. Also, technological change. I think AI is the most prominent one at the moment. But there's also other factors we think of, like demographic change, the age structure of society, what that means for unemployment, for example. We can also think of social stability, and I guess in South Africa's case, instability, and how all of these factors move in on that. So for us, the big elevated levels of uncertainty we're seeing at the moment, it is probably more than just the tariff story, more than just the politics. It is a society that is changing in a direction where our knowledge of the present and the future is just being more unpredictable.
Absolutely. And that spooky, for want a bad word, but it, you know, particularly both policymakers and business find this a challenge. There's also, in this type of environment, there is opportunity. And I know it's a cliche, but it's that ability to adapt and kind of grab the metal of this and actually use it to drive better outcomes.
That's true. I mean, if you look at all of the, let's call it the big successful investors and entrepreneurs and the biggest companies in the world, they all started with unique ideas or adapted ideas when opportunities arose, when there were changes in markets, disruption, this kind of uncertainty. And what we're saying in the South African context specifically, if we think of what the tariffs in the US is doing to some of our export-dependent companies, everyone's saying, let's look at different markets, different opportunities, which is quite valid, obviously. But it actually requires us as South Africans and as an export-oriented economy to rethink how we create the kind of export value, who really needs our products, how do we deliver it to them, and how do we reshape businesses and industries to take hold of these opportunities? Because it's literally that cliche about when one door closes, you have to look where the other door can open.
And some of it, I mean, you and your colleagues, you created a simulation of possible policy responses, and the numbers were huge. It was, what, $188 billion added to exports by 2030. It is huge. It's not necessarily easy. How much is it public-private partnership? In other words, it's not one side going it alone.
Well, our simulation basically said, listen, the world is changing and our biggest trading partners are implementing different policies in response to changes in trade and climate and technology. And we have to try and make use of these opportunities. So, for example, some of the Asian countries implementing green technology ventures that has demand for platinum and similar metals that we actually export. So there's actually a growing opportunity there. And your question about is it public, is it private, is it both? It's certainly one that we all need to work together. The public sector has the political and the technical relationships. The private sector is, that's where most of these products are made and produced and then exported. So it's not something that either public or private sector can go alone. Mm-hmm. And I want to say at least since the arrival of COVID-19, we've seen this heightened cooperation between government and private sector, which in 2025 needs to probably shift towards this direction of thinking, how do we as South Africa send more of our goods to the rest of the world, earn money that way, create jobs that way?
And some of it is, I mean, you mentioned the idea around a hydrogen economy, which therefore in turn creates that increased demand for PGMs. We're the big producer of that. We get a big benefit. Some of it is going to be sort of longer term, but some of it can actually be fairly quick in a sense.
Well, we have to keep track of what's happening in markets globally. As an exporter, you need to be, they say, agile to change. Mm-hmm. And as we've seen in the past 12 months, how quickly trade regimes have changed, not just in the US, but we've seen in many other countries, our trade rules have been adapted. Europe, we know Turkey, India, China, and this is not even just in response to what the US is doing. Each country is looking at its own benefits and its own people and how do they actually help their own economic development and growth. It inherently involves trade and investment with other countries. So it requires us as South Africans, this at the bottom end of this continent with many of our markets far, far away, mm-hmm. to be very much aware of how things develop. And when it comes to technology, for example, developments happen on a weekly basis that we need to try and keep up with. So this is certainly a time for us to realize that our knowledge of the world needs to grow significantly for us to take benefit from these potential opportunities.
I like that phrase you used there, agile to change. And this, frankly, is not asking much new of our business leaders. Good businesses change. A totally wild example is Checkers 6060. And it is that constant evolving. This is what at the heart of good business is doing.
That's true. And you give that example. I think when you look at any industry, there's always going to be a leader or two when it comes to innovation. And then you can see those that do not make it as quickly or as effectively. It shows us that there's room for change. There's room for innovation. There's room to be agile. And it's dependent on business leaders and companies and stakeholders to work together to seize those opportunities, because the risk is that you lag behind. And in this context, it will be other countries and companies in those countries that then seize those opportunities. And that can quickly close a market once again if the market on that side is actually getting the goods it wants and probably even looking at South Africa saying, thanks, we're okay, we don't need your products right now.
That's a great point. If we're not doing it, make no mistake, somebody else is, and we need to get there first, perhaps. Christie Fillon, PwC South Africa, senior economist, always appreciate the insights. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Graham Stokoe, EY Africa Private Capital Leader. Graham, appreciate the time. The recent South African Venture Capital Association Private Equity Industry Survey, you were involved in the process of that. First off, a sort of a big picture sense of sentiment within the private equity sector. And the reason I ask is tariff confusion. It must be hitting everyone. It must be hitting people in the PE space. What is the general sentiment at the moment?
Yeah, I think there's mixed sentiment. I think the global macroeconomic instability and a lot of noise happening doesn't help. But, you know, I think we saw a lot of deal making happen last year and people are looking to deploy capital. And a lot of it was raised pre-last year, 23 and earlier. But yeah, it's mixed because of, I guess, the noise around, but also capital raising was quite weak last year. And so there's a lot of, let's call it uncertainty of whether that is hopefully temporary pause or something longer term.
I get you on that. And that data, of course, will flow in time and maybe we'll start getting some tariff certainty at some point. That said, there certainly are sectors of real interest in the private equity, infrastructure, private credit, two of them, healthcare, tech. There is opportunity and there is interest in some potentially very strong sectors.
Yeah, no, that's correct. And you mentioned quite a few infrastructure being one of the key ones, and that following large amounts of capital raised for infrastructure-focused investments.
Mm-hmm.
And also in that space, probably you do cover it separately, is renewable energy and energy as a whole. So those two have seen, you know, significant amounts of capital. And, you know, it is important in an economy like us where energy hasn't been reliable for the last number of years. And private capital going into that space has been a big thing for the last number of years. But I think this year we saw transition into other infrastructure projects, with its data and digital infrastructure, with its cold storage, logistics infrastructure. So a good story in seeing more investments into other infrastructure sectors outside of renewable energy, which has been a big focus.
It's part of the attraction of infrastructure, because certainly in renewable energy, I've chatted with folks in the space before, is a sense of a predictability of returns within reason and nothing certain. But I imagine that extends broadly to the infrastructure beyond just renewable energy and energy in of itself.
Yeah, and I think it's expanded, let's say, from more PPP or public type projects to very much private sector. So if you think of renewable energy, it's very much expanded into players serving big corporates, also mass market in the private sector. And so, yeah, it's definitely evolved into transforming wider sectors and wider, I guess, markets. And it talks a lot of transformative businesses. Mm-hmm. It's not just a handful of big projects.
One of the challenges coming through from the survey was around talent retention. And in fact, one of the lines talks around deals underperforming, not because of capital scarcity, but because of execution gaps. And I imagine this is partly because private equity is relatively new on the landscape, but it is certainly a challenge finding those folks who can execute on the deals and post-deal, the value add in the process.
Yeah, I know. I think talent is always a key factor, particularly in a market like, and I think will continue to be a key factor, and also in how some of the older PE firms evolve and transition in terms of leadership. And I definitely say, while you mentioned PE sectors new, you know, there's a number of new players, but a lot of talent that's come through from older, bigger players, or once were bigger, maybe not bigger anymore. And so there's definitely a transition in that talent space, and there'll be continue to be that as the asset class matures and younger talent comes through. And we need to do better in retaining and giving the scope for that talent to progress and keep going through.
You mentioned that, and you say as the industry matures. I mean, the outlook, and you said up front, it was tough for a capital raising year last year. What is the sense of the industry in the next 5 to 10 years? I mean, this is not, private equity is not disappearing. If anything, it is going to be a growth asset class. And as you say, as it matures, not just for the managers of it, but for the investment landscape as well.
Yeah, look, I think we saw a lot of new players come in 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the big players came out, and I guess the smaller mid-market side of PE has been where a lot of activity has been happening. I guess also in the bigger space has been in the infrastructure and renewables. So it'll be interesting to see if that larger cap space, who comes in, you know, where the big players reinvent themselves, and it'll be interesting to see that. And then the continued diversification we mentioned earlier, the private credit. You know, it's only 7%, I think, of assets under management on the South Africa or Southern African PE firms, but, you know, more than 80% are interested. So definitely it would be interesting to see how that sort of newer space develops, and, you know, whether that 7% suddenly becomes 20% in 4 or 5 years' time.
Yeah, I've got you. And certainly in other markets, I've chatted to some in the US where it is a much bigger slice of the pie. We'll leave it there. That's Graham Stalker. He's a EY Africa Private Capital leader. Appreciate the time.
That's it for today. We're chatting with Metete Tolari yesterday. He, of course, RMB. Talking US dollar weakness. The dollar's down almost 10% this year against all currencies, the rand, the euro, sterling, everything. We asked him, asked around, will we see more weakness from the dollar? Two-thirds said yes. The rest was split between no, it's overdone, and some of you saying a bounce for now. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. S&P indices versus active.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.